accession number 19815, Reel 2.
Henry Foster, Reel 2.
We were as I remember, about every week we were taken down to the beach, the harbour at Tobruk, to bathe in the sea and to wash our clothes. But we had no means of doing your laundry. Now, we were there maybe two or three weeks, and then suddenly we moved. And we went inland, and I always remember we passed a crossroads on the desert road, and it said El Adam, and there was a big signpost, and it said so many thousand miles to Sydney and so many hundred miles to London. I always remember that. Now, this was June the 4th, as I remember. And all the battalion, we leaguered up on the Thursday night, all in formation, with masses of transport. Then masses of transport, each section had its own truck, and we formed up like a convoy at sea, all in lines, and we were given a little talk and said that in the morning we were going into action. There was a gap in our defence line and our division was going to close it to prevent the Germans. This was in the what they call the Knightsbridge area. Afterwards it was called the battle, the Knightsbridge Handicap, we called it out later. The whole division, and we'd never seen the rest of the division. We didn't know anybody, but anyway, we slept where we stopped, at the side of the trucks. We were fed about 3 o'clock in the morning. I think it were raw bacon and biscuits, as I remember it. American tin bacon. And we were given a jam sandwich, bread, which we hadn't had any bread for week. We were given a jam sandwich to put in as mess tins to eat later in the day. About 5 o'clock in the morning, the whole shebang, we all moved, all in columns. Apparently, intelligence had been out the night before and laid some lights that were looking the way we were travelling for the CO to, that were his direction. He probably had a map, a compass bearing as well, like, but these lights. Now, we were told we were going to close this defence. The only thing we should come to was some Italian infantry and some Italian artillery, and to close this gap. It was a place called Sidi Mufti, as I remember right. Now, as it got daylight, we actually set off in the dark, you see, as it got daylight, as far as you could see on my right, were lines of trucks, the rest of the division. We were all in, more or less in line. The company I was with, D Company, we was the left-hand company of the whole shebang. On our left, there was nothing but hundreds of miles of Sahara Desert. we went through these Italian artillery and Italian infantry like a dose of salts, never stopped. But all the time we were being shelled, there was shells bursting in the air, shells hitting the ground, you could see them flying. This is first experience. Trucks going up in flames, people jumping off. One lad in my truck, he was a wag. He made a joke out of everything, and he had us all laughing. And he got it in the eye by a piece of shrapnel. It tore his one eye out, and somebody put a field dressing on. He says, "Drop me off and I'll walk back." And we just slowed down and he dropped off, and that was the last I ever saw of him. And he set off to walk back.
Did he seem calm?
Pardon?
Did he seem calm?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was quite, yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, he knew what he was doing. Knew what he was doing. Now then, we as I say, we got through the ITI infantry and the artillery, and then we debussed. We got off the trucks. And what few trucks was left immediately went back. We never saw them anymore. Now then, we went forward on foot from there. And of course, there were shells bursting, bullets flying. And actually, we ran up against a German tank regiment that nobody knew was there. We had a few tanks with us. We just had a few. The old Matildas and Valentines. Now, they only had a 2-pounder gun on at that time, or a 37mm. Now we run into this German armoured unit, and as soon as they opened up on our tanks turned round and went back, because they were outgunned, you see. And it left the infantry facing German tanks. Now, as you read history, the other two brigades of the division, they were exactly the same, in the same position as we were. We laid out where we could with no shovels or anything. We couldn't dig with no shovels with us. We just laid out in the open and just waited. My company, being on the extreme left, we were very lucky. We weren't as exposed as the other companies that were farther on our right. Now, two companies got absolutely annihilated. They lost all officers and... But we laid out till afternoon, till we were told to withdraw, and we withdrew on foot. And we withdrew to our admin area, which was maybe 5, 6, 7 miles back, I can't remember, but we withdrew in a real orderly fashion. And the Germans followed us up all the time. You know, and we're still under fire, shell fire and that. We destroyed 2 or 3 tanks of ours that had been damaged and left. We actually destroyed them, set them on fire. Any trucks that we destroyed those as we withdrew. And we actually withdrew through our artillery, which was all lined up, but we withdrew through our artillery. And it must have been 6 o'clock at night, because it used to get dark about 7. 5 or 6 o'clock at night, till we got to our admin area, where they started to feed us. But while we were actually being fed, the Germans actually counterattacked us. While we were being fed. And somehow the order came out, every man for himself. And there was, well, it was chaos. We'd very little transport. We were being shelled. Our artillery was trying to hold the enemy tanks back. But anyway, there was a big withdrawal. Now, behind us, there was a big minefield. And in the dark, a lot of trucks ran onto our own minefield. Now, fortunately, I got on a truck with an officer. It was only a 1500 weight. And there'd be, well, between 20 and 30 chaps on this truck. And he took us south. He did, this officer. He must have known that about this minefield. And he took us south, where he knew it would be quite safe. And we went maybe for an hour, and then we stopped. And we stayed the night all together. And we could hear the sound of the battle carrying on, like. But we just lay doggo, you might say, for the night. And the next morning, he took us through the minefield. There was gaps in the minefield at certain places, and he took us through the minefield, and we eventually finished up back with our regiment at a place called Sidi Rezeg, which was still in that area. And
how upsetting had your first experience of battle been?
Well, I can't tell you that, because I don't remember, but I mean, it was a terrible experience, terrible. But I can't say it affected us, because we got back to Sidi Rezeg, and we got back to some of us met as pals and as platoons. Now, we suffered, we had 300 and odd battle casualties out of the regiment that Friday morning.
Out of the battalion?
Out of the battalion. Which, I mean, a battalion was about 800 strong. We had 300, and it's actually in regimental history, like, how many casualties we had. We had 340 odd casualties that Friday out of the battalion.
Which company were you in?
I was in D Company. And as I say, we were at the left flank. There were nobody else on our left, only the Sahara Desert. Now, we were in 9 Brigade. Now, 10 Brigade, which was on our right, that was one of the other brigade, they were actually annihilated. There were never no more after that Friday. And a few days later, like, I mean, it carried on, did this Battle of Knightsbridge. We call it the Knightsbridge Handicap, you see. It was actually the start of the retreat to El Alamein. Now, at Sidi Rezeg, we reorganised, but we had a big accident. We were, that gentleman there, he tells the story. The RSM asked for volunteers from headquarter company for an ammunition loading party, to load ammunition. He asked for volunteers. and he only got two volunteers. So he detailed the signal platoon to help load this ammunition. Now, while they were loading this ammunition, something happened, and there was a big explosion, and several men and the RQMS were killed. And that gentleman that wrote me that letter, he was right in the middle of it, and he could tell you a proper tale about that.
I think his name is Mr. Gledhill.
That's right. He was actually, his story was, he was stood on the tailboard of the wagon, and he was taking ammunition from people on the ground and stacking it in the back of the wagon. And he said he remembered bending down to pick a box up of ammunition. And the next thing he knew, he was still bent down, but he was covered in blood. And he'd lost all his shirt was blown off his back, and he was covered in blood. And of course, he was seriously wounded. And that was all he knew about the explosion. But as I say, several people were killed, including the RQMS, I think. And anyway, from there, the big retreat to El Alamein started, and we gradually moved back. We kept moving back, and we stayed at several places where we actually dug defences. But we were never committed into action. We dug these defences, and a place called Bug Bug, and two or three places near the coast road and near the sea, and all the 8th Army were all retreating. Everybody were going the same way. Naturally, we were being strafed and bombed at the same time. And then we finished up at an RAF aerodrome, which was farther inland, and it was being used as a landing place for anybody that any plane that was in difficulties, you see. And we were told to stay there for quite a while. We made defences, but they were never used. Now, from there, we actually moved very quickly, because we found out that the Germans had actually got in front of us, if you understand me. We were behind the Germans from this position. And according to the regimental history, we moved out one night very quietly. Everything had to be done very quietly. And we actually moved out and passed between two German columns, very close. We could even see the fires of the blacksmiths repairing the tanks, and, you know. But we actually moved between these two German columns, and each German column thought that we were one of their columns, and we were allowed to go without being fired on. And we eventually finished up at El Alamein station, and I always remember there the line was, as far as you could see, there were trains and, you know, all banked up one after the other. And where they'd been bombed, there were carriages and trucks, and they'd just been moved, and they laid a new bit of line. And from there, we went to a place called Fortress B, where once again we were going to make a defensive halt. It had been prepared. Defensive positions. We were going to make a stand there. We actually laid mines But then a problem came up. There was no water. So that had to be, that was abandoned. And we came out across a track called the Battle Track, across the desert. And this track, it had a 50 gallon oil drum at certain intervals, filled, and that's where it got its name from, the Battle Track. And we had to follow that, and it brought us out on the Cairo Alex main road. From there we went to a reinforcement camp where there was a big naffy. We could get beer and we had fresh water showers. We were treated like, with no parades, nothing. But in the meantime, we got a lot of reinforcements. And we stayed at this camp for maybe a fortnight.
What was everybody's morale like by then?
Oh, I mean, we were all right, and there were plenty of beer, you see. And I mean, there were quite a few old soldiers, you see, in the regiment. They enjoyed the beer. Me, a young soldier, I was just beginning to, you know. Oh, yes. We'd quite a good fortnight. And then, of course, we moved. And we went back up the Cairo Alex Road. And we finished up at El Alamein on Rawayset Ridge, which was part of the defence line of El Alamein. And we stayed there. I couldn't. Maybe 6 weeks.
Doing what?
Well, we put a big attack in to start with and gained a lot of ground back. And then we took defensive positions on this Rawayset Ridge. We dug in and we were bombed every day. There was a place that we called Stuka Valley that they bombed regular. We were bombed at night. We were shelled. We were attacked. But we held the line.
What was this big attack like as far as you were concerned? What was your personal experience of it?
Well, by that time I'd been transferred to the carrier platoon. Now, I told you I learnt to drive. Now, earlier on in the other attack, the carrier platoon had lost 8 carriers and full crew, and they got new carriers and they wanted new crew. Well, looking through my records, I suppose, well, there's a fella here can drive, so we'll transfer him to the carrier platoon. Now, we can transfer to the carrier platoon. Not as a driver, as a gunner. A Bren gunner. Carriers had a crew of 3, a driver and an NCO and a gunner. Now, in this attack, we didn't participate in the carrier platoon. We were more or less at Battalion HQ, defence platoon there. But we were running supplies up at odd times up to the front. We were just behind the front line, if you understand me. We used to run supplies up and things like that. And we did a lot of mine lifting there because we found out that we were in a minefield. Now, we didn't have mine detectors like they have now. We used to do it with our bayonets, a long line of people, and prod the ground with our bayonets till we, you know, found something that was solid and to, you know, uncover it, and that's how you found your mines. And then they were made safe.
By whom?
Well, by your... we had one or two people that were specialised in those sorts of things, you see.
So how dangerous was that?
Oh, that was very dangerous.
Any casualties through doing that?
We had one jeep blown up. And it was actually over a place where we must have missed it, if you understand me. Anyway, we were bombed, we were shelled, we were attacked, and at that time we had a plague of flies to make things worse. Everything was covered with flies. You understand? There were a lot of dead bodies that were partly buried and not buried, and you know, when you wanted to go to the toilet, you just took a shovel and dug yourself a hole, and you couldn't get washed, and you know, we were all suffering from desert sores, and we had a plague of flies. Everything was covered with flies. When you were eating, you were, you know, your tea, when you got your tea, we all had lids. We all made lids out of cheese tin, you know, to put on your tea so that it didn't get covered with flies. Terrible. We stayed there, I should say, maybe 6 weeks. And we held the line at El Alamein. There were other troops beside, but our sector where we were, we held the line.
What effect on you did the bombing have from the enemy?
Well, some people were, some people that, you know, were right in the middle of it, they were bomb happy. We all said we were bomb happy. Anyway, eventually we were moved out, and we handed all our equipment over to another regiment. I think it was a Scottish regiment, I'm not sure, a few miles back, belonging to Monty's army. Now, while we've been holding this line at El Alamein, Monty had been forming his new army at the back, you see, and eventually we were moved out, and Monty's new army took over. And we were moved back as far as the pyramids at Mina, and we camped there. We were there when Monty started his attack at El Alamein. We were, not far from the pyramids at Mina. And we stayed there 2 or 3 weeks, and it was said that we might be wanted back up the desert. But as things happened and Monty's attack was successful, we never did go back up. We eventually moved off and went into Palestine, which it was then. We were only about 300 or 400 strong. We'd lost a lot of men at El Alamein, all the reinforcements we'd had, and that we were only about 300 or 400 left when we went to Palestine. And from Palestine we went by road